Socrates poisoned again after 25 centuries. Discourse number 11, on the 24th of February, 1986, p.m.
Think that utopia is something which cannot be achieved. That's exactly the meaning of the word utopia. Henry Moore wrote a book, Utopia. In which he hopes for everything that man has aspired always, but has never been able to achieve. There have been revolutions. There have been attempts to make alternative societies. All have failed. But that does not mean that we have made every possible effort. I am reminded of Thomas Alva Edison. He was working for the electric bulb for 3 years continuously. All his colleagues were tired, bored. But they were puzzled and amazed that the old man will come before everybody else to the lab, full of zest, enthusiasm, hope that it is going to happen today. Finally, they said, 3 years we have been hearing. 900 experiments have been made. All have failed. But you seem to be absolutely unaffected by the failures. Edison said, no, I am not unaffected. I am immensely inspired. 900 attempts have failed. It means now we are coming closer and closer every day to that attempt which is going to succeed. How long it can elude us? It is a challenge. Do you see his point? He is saying 900 doors are closed. We have inquired, they are round doors. They lead nowhere. Now the number of doors is reduced. 900 doors are left. We are succeeding. We are coming closer and closer to the door that will lead to the successful experiment. Slowly, slowly his colleagues deserted him. His friends left him. But he continued, and one day he succeeded. It was late in the night. Must have been 3 o'clock in the morning. the first light bulb, and he was so enchanted by it that he simply went on sitting under the light looking at it. 5 years he has been working. And his wife shouted from the bedroom, more serene, more collected, more together. The name of the methodology I call is meditation. The individual needs something more than the mind. It is already in him, but he is entangled with the mind. Just a little effort of watching the mind, sitting silently, looking at the mind, as if it does not belong to you, and it does not belong to you. You are the watcher. The mind is the watched. You are the observer. The mind is the observed. You are the subject. The mind is the object. You are not one. Your subjectivity is your liberation. Liberation from the mind. And once you are liberated from the mind, once you know that you are beyond the mind, miraculously, a great mastery arises in you. The mind cannot pull you this way and that. It simply becomes a humble servant. The very presence of the master is enough for the mind to become an obedient servant. You can use it if you want. If you do not want, you can say to it, shut up. And you can remain in eternal peace and silence. Mind is a good mechanism, a biocomputer, but it is not the master. This is the change that has to be spread to every individual on the earth. And then utopia is just by the corner of the road. Then it is not something which cannot be achieved. It can be achieved, and it should be achieved. The people who have been calling me an utopian must be thinking that they are condemning me. They are wrong. I take it as a compliment. Give my thanks to them. and tell them that I am an utopian, my people are utopians, and I want the whole world to become utopians.
The rest is one. Isn't it amazing that of all the places in the world, the first 6 stops on the world tour should be the land of silver and the land of silver?
It is. Just one thing should be understood about it, that in reality Zorba comes first, Buddha comes afterwards. Zorba is the beginning, Buddha is the fulfillment. Zorba is the roots, the trunk, the branches. Buddha is the flowers, the fruit, the fragrance. In reality, this is the order. But I went first to Nepal, the birthplace of Buddha. And then I came to Kret, the land of Zorba. That has a significance. When you approach a tree, first you see the flowers, the fruits. They come last as far as the tree's growth is concerned. But when you go to the tree, those are the first to be seen. And only if you want to go deeper into the reality of those flowers, then you will find that behind those flowers are hidden roots in the earth. In life, Zorba comes first, Buddha comes second. But when you start exploring the reality of Buddha, the flowers, Buddha comes first, Zorba comes at the very last. There are many who stop at the flowers and never bother about the roots. They are the fools. Because they do not understand that the flowers will not exist even for a single moment if the roots do not go on supplying the juice to the flowers. But those roots are hidden under the ground. Perhaps I am the first person who has made this connection between Zorba and Buddha. The ambassador of Sri Lanka wrote me a letter that you should not use these two names together. Zorba the Buddha, because it is insulting to Buddha and it hurts the feelings of the Buddhists. I wrote to him that you don't understand. That's why your feelings are hurt. You are just looking at the flowers and forgetting the roots. Without the roots, howsoever the roots may be ugly, there is no possibility of flowers. The whole existence of the tree depends on the hidden roots. They don't come in the light. They don't publicize themselves. But that does not mean that a man who is really into deep research about man's consciousness will not be able to find them. I told the ambassador that you can hurt as much as you want. But this is my experience, that every Buddha is based in the roots of Zorba. I don't know what happened to him, he never replied. Neither the people who love Zorba will ever think of Buddha. They only remain with the animal part of humanity. Zorba is beautiful as any animal. A beautiful deer, a beautiful lion. The same beauty Zorba has, the same intensity and the same power and same earthliness. I appreciate it, but that is not the end. All that power, all that beauty should go through a transformation to create a far more delicate beauty, far more delicate power, the power of love, far more deeper insight into existence itself, far greater love. Love that becomes compassion, compassion to the whole existence. Zorba is beautiful, but only as a seed. He will attain to his full beauty when the seed becomes a tree and blossoms. I had gone to Nepal first, because that is where the flowers blossomed, and I have come to Crete second, where the roots are. There is a certain logic behind it. I love both, because to me they are one. And I don't love them separately, because then they are half, and the half is ugly. Only the whole is holy. Only the whole has the beauty of organic unity. Zorba is only a dream. Buddha is the realization of the dream. The land of Zorba and the land of Buddha should come into deeper contact. I made this journey to create a bridge, but I see strange bishops here who are protesting against me. I have not come to stay here. Zorba is my past. Buddha is my present. I could have stayed in Nepal, but I cannot stay here. So they need not be afraid. But I had never thought that in the land of Zorba there would be such cowardly bishops dominating people, telling lies to them, provoking them against a guest who is going to be here only for a few days, and who has come just to pay tribute to Zorba, not to these stupid bishops. And I don't care what they are saying, because I have no desire to be here. I can leave tomorrow. I have paid my visit. I have paid my tribute. And those who can understand would have understood. And those who want to remain blind, that is their choice. Instead of coming to me, those bishops are asking the government that I should not be allowed to stay here. This should have come to me. A man coming from the land of Buddha. They should have made some communication with me. They should have inquired that what relatedness I see between Zorba and Buddha. I have enhanced the beauty and honor of Zorba, and with the respect and honor of Zorba, I have made his length also respectable. His people should learn to behave a little more humanly, particularly to a guest who is just going to be here for a few days. I just wanted to see the place which can produce peoples like Zorbas. Zorba is fictitious, but the man who created Zorba must have carried a tremendous dream of himself being in Zorba's place. Because no novelist writes anything which is not actually a compensation to his life. The poets who write about love write about love because they have missed love. Their beautiful poetry about love is a poor substitute. Kazan Zakis wanted to be a Zorba but could not gather courage. And could not gather courage because of his Christian heritage. In his novel Zorba the Greek, there is a beautiful statement. Zorba is working with his boss. The boss is always sad, long-faced, worried, and Zorba is always enjoying small things of life, food, wine, women. After the whole day's work, he will go to the seashore and will dance alone, will play on his musical instrument. The boss could not believe that he has nothing, a poor man, but he lives like an emperor. That night when he came, his boss asked him, that why am I so sad and why you are so blissful always? And Zorba says to the boss, boss, the only problem with you is you think too much. I am a poor man. I don't think. I simply live. In a small sentence that you think too much, he has given the whole insight of meditation. Thinking too much is non-meditative. Thinking less and less, and you become more and more meditative. The moment thinking ceases, you are in meditation. But nobody has explored even Zorba's life. Otherwise he would have found possibilities of him becoming a Buddha. And even before Zorba, Greece has produced a tremendously beautiful man, almost ...2,000 years before, very close to Gautama Buddha. The man's name was Epicurus, and he is not a fiction. He is a living Zorba. His whole philosophy was just to live moment to moment and enjoy each moment as deeply as you can, because once it is gone forever. He has made a small commune in a forest which became known as Garden of Epicurus. But even Greeks have not paid much attention to Epicurus or his teachings. Nothing much has survived, very few fragments here and there. It seems we feel ashamed of Zorba's. And they are authentically real human beings, and only on their solid rocks we can make beautiful temples of Buddhahood, of enlightenment, of awakening. Four-letter word is a four-letter word. All esoterics is nonsense. But the question is significant because you became a sannyasin. Naturally, people must have assumed that you have become esoteric. You are no more part of the ordinary world. You are searching truth, going into higher stages of consciousness. The people must have thought that you have become esoteric. They don't know anything about my sannyas. The old sannyas is a four-letter word. It is esoteric. Esoteric means all kinds of nonsense, that you have seven bodies, that you have 14 stages of consciousness. In India, there is a small, very rich community known as Radha Swamis. They are making a temple in the memory of their dead master in Agra, because he lived in Agra. They want to defeat the Taj Mahal in Agra. For 100 years the work has continued. Only one ground floor is ready. And they have done tremendous job. Seeing their half completed temple, one can understand that if the temple is completed, Taj Mahal will lose its glory. It will be number second. It cannot be number one anymore. But they are running out of finances. It is all marbles and very complicated designs and very esoteric maps on the marbles. They invited me. I was lecturing in Agra. They invited me to come to their temple, and the high priest told me that we have a certain gradation. There are 14 stages of paradise. Muhammad, Moses are in the third paradise. Krishna, Rama are in the fourth, higher than Moses and Muhammad. Kabir, Jesus, Farid are in the fifth, and so on and so forth. They said, "What do you think?" I said, "You are perfectly right. Just one thing is wrong, because their own guru is in the 14th, the highest stage of paradise." I said, "Everything is right. Just paradise has 15 stages." He said, "What?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I am in the 15th. And I have been pushing your guru down in the 14th. He tries to climb up to reach to the 15th, I don't allow him. So I know your guru is in the 14th. There is no problem about him. I am perfectly acquainted with him." He was very angry. He said, "You are the first person who accepted, but the way you accepted, it is worse if you had denied that all this is nonsense, would have been better." No, I said, "It is not nonsense, it is very esoteric. But what can I do? I am in the 15th. And there is no 16th floor. So I cannot go up. I cannot go down. And I am having constant trouble from your guru." Because he goes on trying to knock on my door, and I have to push him back that be in your place, as long as I am here, you cannot enter. I don't want to share my room with anybody else. The Guru said, this is a thing. I said, it is a thing. But up to now it was not a string when your Guru was in 14th. It was perfectly right. Now it is a string. It is all nonsense. Who are you to decide who is higher and who is lower? What criterion you have got? And you are putting Buddha in the 7th plane and your own Guru, who was not known outside Agra and has nothing much in his teachings. I have looked into his books. It is all borrowed from others. He is in the 14th. You should be ashamed to do this. And if you can do this, that you can put Buddha into 7th, Kabir into 5th, and your own Guru into 14th, you cannot prevent me to be in the 15th. What right you have got? If you want to know more about esoteric nonsense, you should look into theosophical literature. There you will be in a wonderland. Colors, auras, masters who are dead but still go on dictating the disciples. Even they write letters to the disciples. Blavatsky, who was the founder of theosophical movement, used to get letters from dead masters. A strange name they have found for a dead master, Kuthumi. Nobody knows who is this Kuthumi. In fact, so that people don't laugh, they call KH. Letters from KH were received continuously by Blavatsky. People will be sitting and Blavatsky will close her eyes and go into a trance, and suddenly a letter will come from the roof. It was in a court case that the whole thing, the whole esoterics was destroyed, because the man who was used to hide and drop letters, because then all were sitting with closed eyes, then he used to drop the letters. And all those letters were found to be written in the handwriting of Blavatsky. And in those letters all kinds of directions were given. Spiritual instructions, the whole theosophical movement is full of this kind of nonsense. Looking at you in red clothes, bearing the mala, people must be thinking that you have gone esoteric. Just explain to them that you have found a man who is the most non-esoteric person possible. And this is nothing to do with any esoteric philosophy. Reality is very simple. But religions, their leaders, try to make it very complex. Try to make it mysterious. It is a mystery, but there is no need to make it mysterious. I used to have a friend, now he is in Bangladesh, he is a Mohammedan. We used to study in the same university. And he loved me very much. Suddenly, when he went back to Bangladesh, he became famous as Bengali Baba. I met him in Calcutta and I asked him, "What is the matter? What has happened?" He had many followers who taught him that he is one of the hidden teachers God goes on sending secret teachers who work in a secret way. I said, "I never thought you are a secret teacher. You have been with me for 4 years." He said, "Let everybody go, then I will tell you the real story." When everybody was gone in the night and we were left alone, he said, "Now I can tell you the thing. The thing is, you know, I am a lazy man. In the university, if you had not been writing my answers in the examinations, I would have failed. I had to do 2 papers in 3 hours, 1.5 hour for myself, 1.5 hour for him." But he was such a lovely person that I said, "There is no harm. I may lose first class, I may come second class, third class, but let him pass. If I leave him behind, he is never going to pass that class again. I have to keep him dragging with me till we are out of the university." He said, "You know, I was a lazy person. I cannot do any job. I looked around, I saw doing something esoteric will be good. No work, no boss, thousands of followers. Great respect. So I said, that's okay, but how you managed it? Because I don't see in you any capacity. He said, no capacity is needed. I just played a trick. I started living in a Sufi dress, green color. I entered into the train, the ticket checker came in. He asked me for the ticket. I said, that is very insulting. Nobody has ever asked me for ticket. A saint is not to be asked for a ticket. You just get out from here. The ticket collector was really angry. He said, this is something. You don't have the ticket and you are telling me to get out from here. Either you give me the ticket or I will throw you out. And he told me that he said, okay, I will not get myself out. You throw me out. The man was a little hesitant. A Sufi mystic. He was also a Mohammedan. Perhaps it may bring a curse or something, and the whole passengers gathered together. And now it was a question of prestige, what to do. He pulled the man out. He stood out on the platform with his stick still inside the compartment. And the miracle was that the train will not move. The driver was trying hard. The guard was waving his flag. The station master was whistling hard. The engineer was looking, there was nothing wrong, but the train was not moved. Finally, somebody in the crowd said, it is because of that mystic who is still keeping his stick inside the train. All the passengers got down and there was a great crowd around him. The station master came running, the driver came, they persuaded somehow the ticket collector that you should not do such a thing. What was the matter? One man you just ask his apology. He was very reluctant that he said, this is strange. I am a government servant, this is my duty, and I have to ask apology for asking tickets. But the crowd was getting angrier, and the situation was such that they may have killed the ticket collector. Finally, he had to touch the feet of the mystic who was standing with closed eyes. But the mystic said that this will not do. You will have to bring some sweets. One coconut and place them at my feet and promise me that never again any saint of my order of the green robes should be asked for a ticket. These trains are running because of us. It was true because they could not manage to move the train even an inch. The sweet was brought, the coconut was brought, they were placed into his feet and he said, now take me back into my place. Just the way you had pulled me out, and learn to respect your government job. If nothing, there is a higher government too. As the mystic went in, the train moved. And since that day he became famous as Bengali Baba. That's all he has done. And now he is living luxuriously. He has done a miracle. I asked him how you managed it. He said it was simple. I had to bribe two persons, the ticket collector and the driver. That ticket collector was my man. And the driver. A simple thing. I gave 25 rupees to each. And I said, it is a question of my life and death. Just do it once and my whole life I can live as lazily as I want. Now people are massaging my feet, bringing sweets, and many miracles are happening on their own. Now I am not doing anything. Sick people get healthy. People who don't have children start getting children in a line. But this is all happening on its own. I'm not doing anything. I have done my first and last trick. The people have been cheated all down the ages by all kinds of charlatans, and they have become saints. They have been telling lies, but there is no way to detect who is right. Hindus believe in one hell. To defeat Hindus, Jainas believe in seven hells. to defeat Jainas, there was a teacher contemporary to Mahavira, Gosala, who believes in 700 heads. You cannot prevent. Neither there is any evidence for one hell, nor for seven, nor for 700. But people are variable. People are so afraid, and these people have been making everybody afraid of hell and hellfire, and making everybody greedy of paradise and heaven and all the joys and the pleasures there. Between greed and fear, all your religions have existed. So whosoever thinks you to be esoteric, tell him that this is for the first time there is a man who is absolutely non-esoteric, who says that there has never been any miracle, that all miracles are either managed or invented later on when the founder is dead. Nobody walks on water. Nobody makes people back alive when they have been dead for 4 days. All these stories and a small human being afraid of getting into some hell from where there is no escape. Naturally gets caught by these so-called saints, miracle mongers, priests, but my sannyas has nothing to do with esotericism. It is purely a science.
The book is just lately, the anniversary of the liberation from the Nazi invasion. It has always been a very meaningful day, because it signals the end of fascism and the beginning of many hopes for a new freedom. Now, at least two generations of Italians are deeply disappointed about what happened after the liberation, and the increasingly cynical attitude towards life is stirring all over Italy. Do you want to say anything to the Italian people in a period when empty words and false hopes of politicians will be heard everywhere?
This is one of the most unfortunate things that man has been exploited in every possible way. Even his hope have been extracted. His inspirations have been exploited. His absolutely valid demands have been exploited. And in 10,000 years, not a single revolution has succeeded. For the simple reason that the people who came into power immediately changed their faces. They came into power because they inspired people and their hopes of a liberated life, of a better life, of more individuality, of more freedom, of more equality, of more richness. They were very articulate as far as influencing the people was concerned. But the moment they got the power, and it was the people who put them in power, the people suffered immensely. Thousands of people died in the hope that their children will live in freedom. It is worth dying. But the people who came into power suddenly changed. They forgot all about revolution. They forgot all about liberation. They forgot all about their promises. They started behaving the same way as the people were behaving who were in power before. In fact, these people proved to be more dangerous because they were afraid of revolution. They tried to make their power more solid, and they destroyed people's freedom more totally, so there is no possibility of any revolution. You cannot conceive the possibility of a revolution in Soviet Union. For the simple reason because in 1917, when Soviet Russia was liberated from the old powers of Tsars, the new people who came to power proved to be more inhuman. 1 million people was murdered by the revolutionaries after the revolution. And these were the people who had placed them in power. But they were afraid of these people because these people are dangerous. They can put somebody else into power. They cannot be allowed to live. Their only fault was that they put them into power. 1 million people were simply destroyed. And then there was a great power struggle amongst the leaders. Lenin was the first man in the revolution. Trotsky was the second man in the revolution. Khamenei was the third man in the revolution, Zinoviev was the fourth man in the revolution, and so on. In 10 great leaders of revolution, Joseph Stalin's name was not there. He was just the secretary of the Communist Party. He was not an orator. He was not articulate to influence people, but he was very clever and cunning in organization, and he proved to be really dangerous, because all these leaders were influencing the people, and Stalin was capturing the Communist Party from inside, the organization which is going to be in power. His name was not known. He was an unknown person. But as the Communist Party came into power, he started giving small doses of poison to Lenin through his doctors. Such small doses that it made him incapable to function. And it killed him within 2 years. And it is still undecided whether he really poisoned him or not, because no investigation was ever made. But all circumstantial evidence is that he killed the man. Because Trotsky, who was number two, seeing the situation, and he was the defense minister, he escaped from Soviet Union in time before he is caught, because he was number two. Lenin is finished. Trotsky escaped and became a refugee in Mexico. But Stalin was not ready to leave him alive. You will be surprised to know that he took his whole family, only his dog was left in the house. Stalin shot the dog too. Now the dog was not going to compete. But because it was Trotsky's dog, it cannot live. And Trotsky was murdered in Mexico by a man arranged by Stalin. Murdered in such an inhuman way, you cannot conceive. With a hammer, hit again and again on his head till the head was completely smashed. The third man, Khamenei, was killed. The fourth man, Zinoviev, was killed. All the 10 top people were finished. And Stalin became one of the greatest dictators in the whole history of men. And he managed that nobody even talks about the government, any criticism. even in private, became impossible. He made the whole country in such a way, small children were part of the Youth Communist League, and they were conditioned to be faithful to communism. And if their parents start anything against communism or the Soviet Union, they have to inform immediately. The wives were members of the Women's League, and they were conditioned that if their husbands or their children talk about the Communist Party or anything suspicious, they have immediately to report. The men were part of the Communist Party with the same conditioning. In every family, everybody was a detective, and people were rewarded when they reported against their own parents, against their own children, against their own wife, against their own husband. And Stalin was not a man to send you to jail or to put you under the trial. No. His method was simple. Once something is reported against you in the middle of the night, you will be captured and never again you will be seen or heard. You are simply finished. He did not believe in any legal system or law or anything. He believed only in death. Why waste time, years and years of legal battle? Just finish the person. In the democratic world, this is the rule, at least in principle, although it is not followed anywhere. That not even one single innocent person should be punished, even if 99 criminals have to be left. Stalin changed the rule completely. He said, not a single criminal has to be left, even if 99 innocent people have to be killed. And for 70 years, the same clique of a small group has been ruling. After Stalin, Khrushchev came into power, and he exposed, because he must be boiling within, seeing all the horrors, murders, poisoning, killing of millions of people by Stalin. So he exposed Stalin when he came to power before the Communist Party. His first address, he said that Stalin has been the most murderous man in the whole history. One man from the back asked, you have always been with Stalin, you have been one of the chief members, important members of the Communist Politburo, why you had been silent when all this was going on. Khrushchev laughed and said, whoever is saying this, please come before, because I can't see your face. It is too dark at the back. Nobody came out. He said, now, do you understand? This is my answer. Why you are not coming out? You know you will be finished. That's why I didn't say anything, because I knew I will be finished. You are asking about Italy. It has the unfortunate past joined with Adolf Hitler's was Benito Mussolini. It has seen the fascist rule of murder, terror, and when they became free, liberated, they rejoiced, they danced in the streets, they sing. But people don't understand one thing, that just getting out of one imprisonment does not mean that you will not get into another. You can get out of one imprisonment, and while you are dancing and singing and celebrating, another imprisonment is being created by your own leaders, who are promising you a better life, a better world, a better humanity. But these leaders are nothing but descendants of Benito Mussolini. The same type of mind. The politician is everywhere the same type of mind. A politician is lustful for power. And once he gets power, then how he can allow you to be free? To be liberated, to be independent. Again you are caught in the same net, and this has been going on for centuries. It is time to understand the whole situation, and it does not help to be cynical, it does not help to be pessimist, it does not help to feel meaningless and empty. It won't prevent the politicians to go on playing the same game. You have to understand one thing, that if the world is really interested to enjoy freedom, then politics should not be so important. It should be reduced dethroned from power. There is no reason that it should have power. The government should be only functional, just as the post office is functional. Nobody knows who is the head postmaster general. Give them good and great names, but there is no need to take them too seriously and waste all your newspaper front pages for these people who have been torturing humanity for centuries. And start different ways of expression, creativity, which have nothing to do with politics. Small guilds, small communes of painters, of poets, of sculptors, of dancers, who have nothing to do with politics, who have no desire to be powerful, who really want to live and live fully. Let the whole society be slowly divided into communes of creative people. There is no need of political parties in the world. But what I am doing is going to continue. Somebody else will be doing. I was not here, somebody else was doing it. Nobody is a founder in it. Nobody is a leader in it. It is such a vast phenomenon that many lighted people have appeared, helped, and disappeared. But their help has brought humanity a little higher, a little better, a little more human. They have left the world a little more beautiful than they have found it. And it is a great contentment to leave the world a little better. More than that, is asking too much. The world is too big. A single human individual is too small. If he can leave just few touches to the painting, which for evolution has been made by millions of years, that's enough. Just few touches. A little more perfection, a little more clarity. I am not part of any fashion, any movement. I belong to the eternity. And I would like you also to belong to eternity, not to a passing phase. Okay, Margaret? Thank you.